to our city council meetings being held this Tuesday, October 5th, 2021. It is 7:04. This meeting is being held at the Community Recreation Center. And I would like to So we will begin with a pledge, and this is being led by Councilmember Miller, and then I will make the motion.
Please rise. Join me in the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our Father in heaven, we're grateful for this opportunity that we have this evening to come together for city council meeting. We're grateful for the opportunity that we have to serve in this community. We're grateful for our residents who are such great contributors and help to help maintain the wonderful atmosphere that we have in our city. We are grateful for this free nation where we can come together and make decisions that are important to our city. And we pray that we'll be able to think things through clearly and make good decisions that will be beneficial to the people that live here. And we say these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Okay. Next item, we will need an approval of the meeting's agenda.
I'll make the motion that we approve the new agenda.
Thank you, Councilmember Smith. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Councilmember Geddes. All in favor?
Aye.
Sounds unanimous. We will move on then to our next portion, which is public comment portion of this meeting. And I have one person signed up for public comment. That's Nathan Stocks. So, Mr. Stocks, you can come forward, just state your name and your address, and then you have 3 minutes to make your comments.
Okay. My name is Nathan Stocks. Oh, sorry. Oh, it's very official. My name is Nathan Stocks, 9451 North, 3830 West. I've lived here since 2010 when I moved from Provo. I just wanted to comment on the fiber and just show my support for, I'm really not informed on the different forms of the financing or the different ways, but I am super excited about getting the high-speed fiber connection. I need a high-speed internet connection for my job. Right now I'm paying over $400 a month to Comcast just to get 35 megabits up, because Comcast just does not support very high upload speeds, and I need it for my job. And one of the things I missed the most when I moved to Cedar Hills was in Provo. I had iProvo at the time, and it was something like $60 or $70 a month, and it was 100 megabits up and down at the time, and that was in 2010. And here 11 years later, I'm paying over $400 a month, and I got a third the upload speed. And so I'm super excited. I don't really have an opinion on the way that we do fiber, but I would love to see it, and I just wanted to show my support.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that comment. Is there anyone else who can get a chance to sign up that would like to make a comment? Okay, seeing none, we're going to move on then to our reports and recognitions. And we have a special recognition tonight. And we have a wonderful resident in our community who does the city such a service. And it's Linda Hutchings. She's sitting right here. Linda Hutchings every day goes to Harvey Park and collects everything that people leave behind. And she takes a picture, but sometimes she dresses things up like a basketball with sunglasses, or, you know, it makes it look cute. And she says, hey, here's what was left at Harvey Park. She does it in such a sweet way, just to remind people, you're leaving things at the park, come and get it. Because we have a lot of things that get left at Harvey Park, because it gets used so much, and it's such a fun place to be. And then I guess kids realize it's dinner time, and they run home and leave their shoes or their socks, yeah, or their scooter, how they get there, and how they get home. But I would like Linda to come up, and would you mind coming up and telling us about what you do and why you do it? This is so wonderful.
Thank you.
Well, I have to say, this started out just kind of as a result of my walking around the neighborhood. Harley Park's about half a mile from my house, and it's a nice walk down there and walk around the park and walk back. And I go out early in the morning before it got hot. And the first couple of times I was really pretty shocked to see how much stuff was around the park. Not just trash, of which there was an abundance, but shirts and shoes and towels and you name it, things kids leave behind. And I wondered what happened with it, so I started gathering it up and just putting it in one place, thinking, well, maybe they'll come back and get the things, but it became obvious that it didn't, for the most part. It just was still there the next day or 2 days later. And I was afraid it was just going to be thrown away. So I would gather it up, and there's a Boys and Girls Club donation box between Harvey Park and Alice, and I just walked by there and donated. And I just started doing that, and I just continued to do it. And I found that, you know, it hopefully has made people more aware. You know, when they're there, they check before they leave, they have their belongings. And I've seen the shift from when the scratch cart closed and all of the little samples and towels and things were no longer being left. Although there's still sometimes little jackets and shoes, still socks. Socks are the weird thing. Okay. Right? You know, one sock or two socks, who leaves their socks? But now it's hoodies, sports equipment, things over by the ball field. But I noticed that about a week ago when I posted quite a few things, all of a sudden nobody's leaving anything over there. So I think the sports teams realized they had a responsibility to clean up when they left to make sure they didn't leave things because they were expensive equipment. So I've just been happy to do it. It's just been fun and got me out of the house, made sure I got my walk in and got my exercise.
Wow, we appreciate you. And I would like to present to you this Community in Action Award. That certificate proudly presented to me.
Linda, I for one am glad, happy to meet you. I see your posts all the time, and now I can put your face. I get a kick out of them. My kids, so we kind of laugh at some of them and how cute they are that you do fun things.
It's fun. Some things go to the Dropbox. Some I put my car, and if I'm going down into your report, they go to DI or
That's where they usually go to die.
Oh, that's fun. Okay, so we are going to move on now to our city reports and business. We'll start with Mr. Goodwin, city manager.
Thank you. I think we'll get less feedback if you're not speaking. Turn your mic off. So I think that helps. Couple things. I want to commend the golf course and the Vista Room. They've had some continued success. Golf courses continue to stay extremely busy. They have a number of tournaments this month. And the Vista Room has had some of its busiest months since opening almost 10 years ago. So we want to commend them on their efforts. We have a few rec programs that are open for sign-ups right now, Junior Jazz and Ski Bus. Both those programs typically fill up. So if you want to sign up, ensure a spot, get it now.
Where's the Ski Bus this year?
I believe it's still bright. It's still brightening again.
Right.
Yeah. If you haven't noticed already, your PI water has been shut off. We turned it off. We filled the tanks last weekend, and what was there was used, and they're now shut off for the season. We want to commend the residents for their conservation efforts. We did see a drop in usage this year, and we want to thank those that really did their part. If you see the golf course watering, we do still have a little bit of water coming in from the American Fork Canyon ditch that is our water. And so rather than let that bypass the city, we are feeding it into the golf course. So that you'll see that for the next 10 days. The firehouse will be open to the public on October 13th for an open house from 6 to 8. It's a good time to go see their apparatus, go meet the firemen. And I think always enjoy a hot dog, so see you there. The city is hosting a wellness and mental health town hall on October 18th with Dr. Christy Kane to talk about mental health and strategies. That is free to the public. We encourage people to come and participate in that. And finally, ballots for the election will be mailed out next Tuesday. And from our last meeting to this meeting, we do now have a drop-off location. It's at the Cedar Hills Fire Station next to the utility drop-off box. So if you want to spread the word there, they can drop their ballots off in Cedar Hills. Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Is that going to be listed on the list that comes with the ballot?
Should.
It's already on the county's website and our website.
Councilmember Geddes.
So the fire station is our fire station that will be... The open house will be there.
Yeah.
Did you say 6 to 8?
6 to 8.
Okay, thank you. I have nothing else to report.
I don't have anything to report other than just to thank Kelly. She has taken this YCC and single-handedly, I mean, I've done where I can, but, you know, between work and children, and she has just, I wish I could list everything she's been doing with them. I am writing on her coattails, but... We've got, I'm sure you probably talk about what we have coming up, so I just wanted to say thank you and let you all know how hard she's working and doing great things. So, thank you.
We attended, some of us attended the ULCG conference last week. We had some great seminars and heard some great reports. We actually got to hear a keynote speaker from Captain Scott Kelly, who spent over 500 days in space. And that was so cool to hear about how people became astronauts. I know that has nothing to do with the city, but I enjoyed that so much, and I enjoyed the opportunity to mingle with the other mayors and city councils and recorders and city managers from all over the state and hear what's important for the people in the state. You know, every city is different, and every city has different needs, and it's hard to, you know, try and meet all those needs, but the Utah League of Cities and Towns is a great representative for our city, and they fight up at the at the Capitol on our behalf, so I appreciate them. I actually don't have anything else to
I went to the conference too, and appreciated the collaboration that we have there with other cities. We were able to talk about things that work for us, that don't work for us, and share ideas, and I love those conferences. And then also be able to meet with the ULCG leadership and let them know how we feel about things in the city so they can advocate for us, and that's super beneficial. So we kind of were able to have a caucus, and they were able to ask us so that they can kind of figure out what their goals will be for us next year. So I appreciate the opportunity to go to that. And then YCC is tomorrow night. The Youth City Council has volunteered to help the American Pork Chamber. We're part of the American Pork Chamber as part of the North Utah County Alliance there. And so they have offered to do a meet and greet and debate tomorrow night. And the Youth City Council will be helping them do that. So we're excited about that opportunity for the residents to meet the candidates and hopefully make some really good informed decisions when our normal ballots come, which is only about a week away. So hopefully you'll be able to spread that to your neighbors and invite them to attend or at least follow up afterwards with the candidates and be a part of the process. It is here. Not sure where in the building yet, but it is here. The basement is scheduled. And it's from 6 to 8 tomorrow. So I'm going to encourage you to come.
Thank you. So the request for proposals for the golf course project went out last month, and the city received 3 bids, and those have been provided to the city council in your city council packet. Of the 3 bids, let me pull up the project. The public sake, wanted to pull up the project and explain what it was real fast. So the project consists of 2 phases. It's we decided that we're going to move away from the driving range business. As you recall from the previous meeting a couple months ago, we talked about how much our driving range is actually utilized for how many buckets of balls get sold. And consistently over the years, it's been 20 rounds of golf to 1 bucket of balls. And so we believe that there's a big discrepancy in this being used, not as much as it could be. In addition, we have a number of balls that get hit over the nets. And I think the council and the staff, we brainstormed some ideas and felt like the best solution wasn't necessarily to spend money to raise the nets so that we continue to have this 20-to-1 utilization rate, but to do something that's probably new, exciting, and fun, and maybe opens up the game of golf to people that maybe otherwise wouldn't be golfing. Our course is a very difficult course, and if you're going to learn to go golf, it's not going to be on this course. But what we proposed is a short course. It's 6 holes. That's a kind of executive 3-hole course where you can go with walk the course. You don't need a driving, you don't need a car. You can go walk the course and probably do this in 45 minutes, but you can take a child. And I spoke about my 9-year-old. He's asked me 2 times since the night I talked to him about it. He really wants to come do this. And I've talked to other parents that feel the same way, that this is a chance for them to go out and teach golf to someone in the family that otherwise wouldn't be able to do that here. So the project consists of, hold on a second. Converting the driving range into this 6-hole configuration, it would require the relocation of the hole 18 tee boxes to be moved to the northwest. This would change hole 18 from a par 5 to a par 4, making it a 71-hole course rather than a 72. Additionally, the putting green up out here on the northwest side of the building would be expanded and reshaped to be more in line with what professional designs call for. A large flat area where you can warm up. And then these tee boxes here on hole 1 would be reshaped to aim in a more square manner towards the fairway on hole 1. If you look at them right now, they really aim towards hole 2, which explains why my ball always lands down. Sorry, hole 4, which explains why my ball always lands on there. But we've set aside $950,000 for this project. We received a bid. The lowest bid was. But the lowest bid was Duinic, and they bid at $951,000, so a little bit over budget, and that does not include the money that we spent on the course design itself. So we're going to be doing a budget amendment as well in the coming meeting. But the nice thing about Duinic out of the 3 bids that we received is that they've done landscape and golf course work in Utah. They've worked with the architect before on a golf project. They have 20 plus years in this type of business. They're a certified golf builder, and they have bonding capacity. So they have a lot of experience in working on golf courses, and specifically projects like this. So I think there's a high level of trust there. So what we're asking tonight is for the council to award that bid to Duinic and authorize the mayor to enter into a contract with them. We're hoping to get this thing going as soon as possible. We want to use the winter time and any time we can to get this moving. So our goal is to have this open, this short course open for next golf season.
I think it's also important to point out that we had, what did we set aside, $950,000 to raise the nets to fix the net situation. And so that money, instead of doing that, it's going towards building this course and making the changes. So,
but
it's much.
We've done a brief analysis as well, just to touch on that point. And right now we budget, I want to say it's $25,000 annually for range revenues. Let me get that maybe $30,000. We feel like with this booking peak times on this type of a course, we can exceed what the range makes and have this be, over the years, not only a useful, but we'll recoup money faster than a range book.
Anybody have any questions or comments?
So, my only comment, I'm the most avid golfer on this. Well, Ben's up and out a little bit.
I can hit it straight now.
So. Okay, Ben's been practicing. But just my unscientific general comments from the people that I golf with and I associate with, I think it's a positive thing. It's probably 10 to 1 over the negative. 10 to 1 positive.
And this is from golfers that you've interacted with on the course?
And non-golfers that would like to play a little bit of golf but not want to go play either 9 holes or 18 holes. And like you said, we are not an easy golf course. I mean, if you want to go, you know, flat, you can go play at Fox Hollow, it's, you know, loose balls. It's not an easy course there either. I'm just saying it's a little bit more friendly. And I think it's the right thing. So I'm glad we're doing it.
We've been pushing it out to the public and to the golfers. So there's been an easel with proposal out there, instructed golf staff. I want you to start talking to your season pass holders. I want you to start talking to golfers about it. I'm really promoting it. And I think their feedback is very much in line with what you're hearing. And that there's the occasional, oh, I hate this, but. Most people aren't using our driving range anyway. So this is an exciting thing.
I mean, I'm not a huge driving range person, so I know a lot of people are, so you know, that most avid golfers, that probably affects them. We might lose a few rounds of golf, but you know, I think we'll gain community support, because like you say, you can take your son, my kids are all grown and they're all golfers, so it doesn't matter, but we'd probably play it anyway, go for 45 minutes, and the four of my sons and I would play and have fun.
So I remember from some early discussions, there was the idea of floating artificial area where it's accessible.
Yeah, we're trying to minimize the maintenance costs, so tees, we're trying to create, the greens will be actual greens, and so they'll need to be maintained like the greens on the course themselves. But the tee boxes, we're trying to create a little area where you drive off artificial turf, and that's to reduce the maintenance. And we're going to be working with the builder on that, probably trying to do some value engineering, but that is the intent. Yes.
And on the net top, does it say hitting net temptations? I imagine that because it's a net, people would just be warming up with their own balls, or?
We're gonna give them 5 balls. We're gonna give them, check in if they want it. We're gonna plan and give them 5 balls and just get right in the net, and we go collect them. Okay. Charles, did you say something?
Well, I'm just gonna say, yeah, they have something like this in Las Vegas, about one of my cousins' husband showed me, that's very nice, and he appreciated a chance to just hit a few balls. Maybe it's 5 balls, I don't know, maybe it's 10 balls if they want to pay more, but just whatever. I think it will just adjust, refine it over time, whatever the demand is.
And if they want to hit it over the net, because they're so close to it, those balls will land in the tree and out of the house, so it's not something to worry about. And then because we talked about the issues that we had with balls going on the course, you've got a road here, and every year there's a number of windshields that get broken, they bounce off the asphalt, and they land in the park. A neighbor to the south, when I met with him a couple years ago, I walked in and there was a big hole in his kitchen window, and our fences get pockmarked, or stucco gets pockmarked. On this course, the balls are going over the fence, they're being hit maliciously. There's just not a way that this course should allow the balls to be hit over the fence. There's just no way. Without
the change. And the net will stay just as is.
Yeah. The net, yes. We're keeping the net as is.
Do we have opportunity to put cameras up? Because we can't staff, obviously, but I mean, just
We talked about how we staff this and things that the staff still gonna have to work out. But my anticipate that it's going to be check in at the clubhouse for the tea time, and then take the cart down, and there's a spot for car parking, and then just hop on hold and go through.
I just wanted to say for residents, sometimes like you see these things and you think it's out of the blue. It's a long process, a lot of discussion, a lot of research, a lot of background information. Like, you don't do these things quickly. So I hope people appreciate if they've only heard of it for the first time that there has been a lot of work and going into this and a lot of time and effort on staff's part and on our part. Some of us met with the designer, we gave our input, we drove around and looked at things, we got a lot of questions from staff. We're residents too, so we want it to be beautiful, we want people to come to it, we want it to be financially feasible. And so all of those things, just I wanted to put them on the day that we can ask a ton of questions and done a lot of work.
For a long time we explored raising these nets, and this is the proposal that we received, and these brown ticks here, you see, that's our existing netting. You can see what we'd have to raise that to in order to capture enough of all the balls that are heading out. They look like Topgolf down there. And we've had, independent of each other, two studies look at our course and say, your range is too narrow and your range is not deep enough. And there's just not a place down there where we can widen that or we can lengthen that. So we're really hamstrung. So this is, I appreciate staff, Charles especially, in terms of thinking outside the box, in terms of how we can approach this problem in a way that moves the city in a positive direction.
Can I ask a question? If we award this tonight, do you know when they would start construction?
We'll get it scheduled as soon as we can. I think we're trying to do that next month, okay?
Originally they said they, you know, they booked pretty heavily, but they have an opening in November, and they would try to work on it early in the spring.
So finish date late spring?
Depending on the weather. We have, when we're building Harvey Park, it was such a wet spring that really delayed construction.
I think they tried to get a lot of the shaping done.
If the weather cooperates,
if the snow, as long as there's not snow, I think they can work.
But we want snow. Let me reiterate, we really want snow.
Two-edged sword there. But they're trying to get it before, you know, summer.
I didn't carefully study, but are they planning to sod or seed?
Sod. I believe it's seed. There is also, if you look at the plans where the T's are, there's some artificial turf for easier maintenance. It's mostly grass.
Are we allowed to ask questions?
Not a public comment portion, but.
So the only, throughout this whole thing, we can't ask any questions?
At the beginning, we had public comment.
Right, but I don't know anything then.
That's true. And you know what? I'm fine. If you have a question, I would invite you to come on up. Say your name and your address, and you have 3 minutes.
Oh, I don't have a 3 minute question.
Okay.
Rob Leader in 10283 North Forest Street Drive. How are we paying for this?
Very good question.
Very good question. This came up when we were discussing this, because the question was, is, are you raising property taxes? Are we doing this through debt? No. We're using some city reserves. So we're not asking for any money from the community other than what we've already saved. The process of budgeting over the years, we budgeted in a very conservative manner in that we, golf specifically, so I'm going to use golf as my example tonight. We budget golf in a manner that we minimize our expenses and we actually project really low revenues, considering what we've received in past history. So to that point, this last year we cleared, honestly, it was just over $1 million in the golf course in revenues.
Yeah, so I mean, we were in the last year's budget, for example, we were anticipating horrible numbers because of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And what surprised everyone is we had record numbers at the golf course and sales taxes because people were spending a lot of money on Amazon. So what ended up happening is, yes, usually our reserves take a long time to build up, but our reserves built up for our capital projects fund much faster in the last 2 years, just because we anticipated a downturn, we made lots of cuts, and we were able to put that money into savings. So the golf course contributed some of the money, and then extra sales tax and programs did better.
So my point with the golf course is, you budgeted about $700,000 roughly in revenue. The golf course brought in over about a million. Same thing with the general fund. Cheryl, we budget very conservatively on our sales tax numbers, and especially with the Wayfair v. South Dakota decision from the Supreme Court that localized the sales tax generation to the point of sale. The city's seen a big increase in the amount of money that we receive through sales tax. Some of our highest months that we've received in sales tax numbers haven't been the result of Christmas shopping. It's just been March or something. So it's hard to project, but even despite that, we're still budgeting conservatively, and we're using this excess revenues that we're setting. We're setting it aside in the capital projects fund, where it allows us to do these types of projects without going to the public and saying, we're going to do this through debt. So, a fair question.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
I'd just like to add a comment to that, but the golf course is an amenity to the city, just like, you know, at this point, it's the same thing as roads and trails and parks, where we want to keep it usable and future-proof. Be responsible stewards of what the city has at this time. You know, as a city council, we inherited it, and we, our interest really is to just keep everything in the best possible shape we can in a fiscally responsible way. And with that, I just want to say thank you so much to the staff for enabling that, getting that to us, and making these priorities so that we can have things like this that are nice for years and years to come.
One other thing let me add is that, like I said, with when you include the engineering and design work that we've already spent money on, it's more than what has been set aside. So we're going to be coming back to the council with a budget amendment. We're going to ask to set aside some money for some building improvements for when we eventually take over the fire station. And we know that's not going to be this year. So we're going to ask you to reclassify that money from the building improvements to the golf course. And then over the course of the next year, as we anticipate to move into the new adult fire station, we will replenish that fund for some of these extra reserves we're seeing.
I just wanted to mention again that this is money that I already set aside for the net.
The net's another project.
The net's another project. But as a council, we felt like this was the best way to use that money that we had already set aside. And so it is a new money that had to be created for this project. It's money that we had already spent to invest into the golf course and to those types of projects. And we, again, we feel like this will be benefit to the community. It will be better than raising debt that they told us still weren't going to keep the balls off the road. And so I would, you know, that's one of the reasons that I appreciate this idea. Thank you, everybody, for the thoughtful comments. Is there anything else anyone would like to add? And if not, I will entertain a motion.
I'll make that motion.
Thank you.
I move that we approve the Dolenik bid for the improvements to the golf course and to authorize the mayor and city staff to negotiate and sign a contract based on the provisions outlined in the bid proposal.
Thank you. I have a motion made by Councilmember Geddes. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
Thank you, Councilmember Ellsworth. Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Councilmember Smith. Aye. Councilmember Ellison. Aye. Councilmember Geddes.
Aye.
That motion passes unanimously. Thank you. We're going to move on to our next item, which is a review action on the lower meter reading system. And Kevin Anderson is going to be presenting. I know we have representatives from all of here too, so I'm just getting here.
So as you guys know, we've been talking about doing this meter infrastructure. I think about a couple months ago about starting to buy the infrastructure part of it to cut down some of the costs that they are on there. So for the past year, I've been looking at different meter systems around the area and other cities due to the comfort water and the infrastructure. effort we really have been shown to save actually 30% of the water sometimes. So we're trying to get more effort meetings and stuff so we can try to save water in the future. So. And so then we had I've been looking at two different vendors, and one of them was Census, which we have Census right now, but it's an old system, it's a driveway system. So we're looking at upgrading to a new system that's more accurate to read the water. So. And also, we talked with Alpine and stuff about they started this meeting here a couple years ago for their PI water. And they were with a company called Badger, and they weren't really happy with them, so they kind of wasn't applicable towards them. And we're going with this. So. And this is a few reasons why I think that Mueller would be good for the city. The Mueller reading system is a radio technology. It's not only cellular technology. So we're not dealing with the 4G, 5G as much, where we don't have to upgrade this. When we go from 4G to 5G, we're not having to pay a bunch of extra money in the future to upgrade these collectors later on. So we're going to save money that way, because the other systems around are using their cellular type of reading. And when they do it, this, like, we kind of do the same thing in the parks with our other track system. It's a cellular system, so we've had to upgrade all that. So it's kind of been kind of a money figures. And also, the Mueller meters, they're a lot cheaper, but they're proven. They're a proven meter. And when I was in another city in Oregon, we tried a bunch of different meters, and the ones we found best were the Mueller meters, because the accuracy was there. And the number one thing is that the warranty and the people that would come out and help us with the system were right on it. And with the Census, it wasn't like that. We always had a good time, so it was terrible for billing. For billing reasons, it was terrible. It was just a scenario. So it did the price it's due. So. And we also contacted a bunch of different references. I think I've seen those in your packets. Different cities that are using the Boy and stuff, and they have nothing good to say about it, and they say it's really spot on. Good for their students, so that's kind of a good feedback for us. And like I already said, the customer service for Mueller is really good. If there's an issue, they're right on top of it, and they'll be here to help us alter the project. And even they're here today, because they knew we were going to talk about it today, so they're like, we're going to come just in case there's any questions from you guys as council for them. So anyway, we went up for bid last month, kind of like the golf did, through the state's website. And Mueller was the only one that could meet the bid, and they're the only ones that bid on it. So even I did that was the only one. So. And you guys know that we're going to do 155 meters with this new system. And we're going to start putting those around. And some of the, I know PI shut it off now, but we'll be putting them in some of the PI meters when they're popping them out, putting those in. Around we have already. Some of the council members that we have PI meters right now, so we'll be installing those. So they'll be able to see that when PI starts up again, that they'll see their usage. And they'll go online and look at their usage and see how much they're using. And to people that don't have them installed yet, we're gonna try to get to the council members and get those installed so they can watch them and they'll have a while to see what they're doing.
So, can
I ask a question? Sure.
155 meters that you're
replacing.
Are you doing it randomly throughout the city?
Or
choosing a neighborhood besides the council? What's your plan?
What our plan is right now is we'll probably put most of them down at Cedar Canyon, because they're already plumbed for PI and Culinary Bowl. But we'll start with Cedar Canyon, and then we'll use the rest to put them around the city in different areas. So people can start, like, for council members in different areas, so you can kind of start to educate your neighbors. Hey, we're getting meters, you might be looking at that. That's going to work here in the future. And also, we're going for the Water Smart Grant right now, which would be a, install all these for us. That one's getting installed sooner than the dry out times.
Okay. So this bid includes the meter reading software, the readers, and 155 meters.
155.
100, sorry, 155 meters. You hear that, Mr. Anderson? We're going to get a meter on our PI system.
Don't you have one already?
No.
She doesn't have one, though. There's only a few.
It's internal.
I think there's only a couple people, Marty, the only one that's on the grounds right now that has one on the grounds.
Mike, right?
Mike, I think you're it. I think you're it.
He's the only one left, so we'll be going to a lot of your guys' houses.
So mine gets re, I mean, does it fit in the same slot?
Yeah, it's the same exact meter we have now.
And I think anything new is supposed to provide. Are we requiring that on the construction?
Yeah. They put the box, that's why he's saying with Cedar Canyon, it's plumbed. So they've paid for that meter and they've set the box where we just need to put the meter in.
So we collect that at the building permit fee now?
Yeah.
And we'll be
doing that. I thought we were doing that.
Yeah, we are. But we didn't want to install. We didn't want to install a meter not knowing what system we were going to use for reading and informing the public. So that's why we've held off until now, until we found something we're satisfied with.
So. I mean, my box is pretty big. I have to admit it. My biggest box in my yard, but, you know, it's all right.
Well, look, and if it's, maybe someone can downsize the meter.
It doesn't matter.
Depends on the size of the meter, too, on the size of the box. And most everybody here is going to have a 3/4 inch or 1 inch meter anyway. Most services are like that. I'm not sure. An HOA or something that services all HOA residents. And, there will be an annual cost to cover up to 2,000 meters of $11,000 starting that year for them to monitor our system and help us with the computer part of it and get us all done running. And that'll be a month of possible fee for next year. As we add more meters, that price will start going up a little bit. But for 2,000 meters, it'll stay pretty close to the same level.
We have about 2,500 households, so
Too much. Mm-hmm. And then eventually we'll have the culinary swap over too, so we'll only have one system, so we're not jumping back and forth with different systems. And when you got your phone or your computer, you can see how much usage you're using your culinary side and how much your PI is used. That'll tell you if there's a leak in your house or you got a running toilet that's going to make a culinary shift. So it's going to be a lot better than what we have right now. And then there will be an increase, like I was telling you, $11,000 now. It could be up to 0-3%, or it depends on technology and stuff. So that shouldn't be much over that. So. And there'll be the musical guys, Ferguson guys will be letting me know in advance so I can get it on that.
I want to say too, the state is getting ready to mandate the metering, so we're trying to get ahead of the game. We're forced to do it, and we're not ready to do it. So we're trying to get ahead of it, be ready to have our city meter. And we found out that the only thing that changes people's water use is the weather. When it rains, most people turn off their sprinkling system. But that's the only thing that makes a difference, except for metering.
Right.
When you see what you're using, and you might get fined for going over what you're supposed to use, and this is based on the size of your lot and all that, different that's accounted for. But I think it's going to go a long way towards water conservation. We have got to figure out a way to conserve water. And it's not coming out of the sky like it used to. So we need to find a way to get ahead of this in the city.
Especially if we have a year like we have this year, next year's the same, it's going to be even higher than this year for us. And the state is cracking down. So.
Yeah.
So, the city herself, we're happy to have Mueller be one of the first that supervises with the meters and the system that we have. So, we recommend approving the bid amount for the initial meter reading system, and then we'll have the person come in and train us on the meters and the system and help us set up the meter reading system probably in the next 6 months, start working on that. Hopefully, it's in probably 6 months. And like I said, we are also pursuing the state's federal grants right now, like the Water Smart Grant, and we hope to install the meters as funding becomes available and as a budget to try to get the super clean up and over time to have a great job.
So is it Mueller or is it Ferguson?
We have
both names on here.
Yeah. Ferguson is a supplier.
Okay.
And Mueller is a builder and for the built meters and systems. And then you'll do with the electrical part of it.
So whoever makes the motion.
Mayor?
Yes.
I don't know that it's a concern, but it's just something that kind of stuck out. Is that we only received one qualified bid. And so it sounds like staff is happy with the product and the service. And it sounds like from the knowledge that they have that it's competitive, but it would have been preferable to be able to compare and see what the market is at. But if people don't submit a bid, they don't submit a bid.
So like I said, I've been working on it since almost a year now. And I did go out for three bids, but then we decided that it was over the amount, so we said we better go out to the state bid. So I got a bid from Mountainland, which is Census. And I did, me and Cheryl spent a long time on the phone, but we did call around in the places, and most, even the Badger people, they set up times to meet with us, but would never show up. So we did get an extra, we did another bid.
Can I say something?
Sure.
So before we went out to bid and before, when we talked about this in the past, Jeff had got numbers and Kevin had got numbers from Mountainland and Census, and we already knew that they were more expensive for annual maintenance and also their increases were higher than what Mueller were. So price-wise, we know that. And then Badger, they sent in a bid late, and their meters were twice as much. And I reached out to the cities that had them, and they said he talks about endpoints, their antennas on the meters. They had 10 to 15 failing every month with the Badger brand, which is a lot to have to replace every month. They're $100 each. So didn't get really positive reviews from the other brands, from the other cities. And so when we went out to bid, we weren't expecting anyone to compete very well anymore.
Because of the prices we already got,
we knew that they were already the low price, better service.
Yeah.
And who did Alpine? Did they also do Alpine?
No, they Alpine and Badger, and
they're the ones that are having great
right now. So they said, lean away from Badger right now, they said not to go that way. And Census bid came in quite a bit higher, but for the same bid we got here, they were like $35,000 more than what we already get this bid or something.
Yeah, so as long as Ferguson's keeps good customer service and low prices, then we can recommend them. Now this system can work with Badger meters, it can work with,
yeah. If
for some reason down the road they no longer offer us the best, we can use other meters with this system.
They're all interchangeable, all the meters are. So you can put a Census meter with the Mueller system, or you put a Mueller meter with the Census system. It's just whatever's more friendly, user friendly for us. Census system is not user-friendly for us, so I know I'm against that. I had an argument before I switched over to the new system, and that was night and day sort of switch. It really was.
Can I ask a detective question?
Sure.
Because I've been a long time since I lived in that meter box, probably 6 or 7 years ago, I put it in. But are they on a yoke?
They're not. They're on just regular meter stops right now. I believe unless yours is plumbed differently, but I know the ones down in Cedar Canyon are in Severs right now. So
a little bit more challenge to keep it
on.
On the design for the secondary water, we do have a design standard now for those. And they are similar to a regular culinary water meter, can and box. So when you're commenting that you had a larger box in your yard, that won't be typical. It'll just look like another water meter can around. The style is what has been planned.
The cast type?
Or small, because they're not as deep.
So they won't be the green ones in the lawn? They'd be the cast ones out of the street?
Yeah, sort of plastic. Yeah. We're looking at possible. It's a little bit different design, so we can drain them in the wintertime, but it basically will be that round lid in the yard.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about. Yeah, they're plastic.
Yeah.
Trying to keep everything beautiful.
You know, honestly, that's a lot easier. It was quite an ordeal to tear up my lawn.
So we only want to tell the lawn once and we can help. That's all I'm doing.
Does anyone else have any questions for Mr. Anderson? Not, I would entertain a motion.
I'll go ahead and make a motion to approve the Ferguson Miller bid for the improvements to the meter system and to authorize the mayor and city staff to negotiate and sign a contract based on the provisions outlined in the bid proposal.
Thank you. And I have a motion by Councilmember Ellsworth. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Councilmember Bettis. Councilmember Albert.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Councilmember Smith.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellison.
Aye.
Councilmember Bettis.
Aye.
Thank you. That motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate that. Okay, we are going to move on to our next item, which is a review action on branding.
I don't believe anyone chasing me is here.
Yeah.
So, I think we got skunked. I think we're going to have to get that rescheduled. Okay, so, I'm going to table this item and bring it back.
Okay, all right. Do I have a motion to table this item?
I'll make a motion that we table this item.
Thank you, Councilmember Smith. Thank you, Councilmember Ellison. Will you have a second? All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Item number 9. So.
I'll reach out to Chase to you.
Okay.
I apologize for that.
No, that's fine. All right, we'll skip then to number 10, review action on the Vista Room Resident Night Policy.
All right, so the staff is requesting the City Council consider amending the policies that we've adopted for the use of this building and specifically for this room. The current rate is for $50 to $100 per hour to rent this on the resident rate night, which is Mondays and Wednesdays. It's $50 if you have half a room, $100 an hour if you have the whole room. As compared to, we'd say, $1,500 for a similar night, for the whole night. But the staff would like the council to consider the following changes. We do get some requests, so we want to make sure that we're facilitating this room and use of this room for as many residents as we can. Limiting the resident rate rentals to one per calendar year. We've had people that will want to rent it out, and then it's a successful event. We're really trying to work with our clients, our residents, and watch rent it again. But we want to keep that open to as many residents. So we had a request, for example, recently we had a request for somebody that wanted to rent it every week. And that just isn't what the intent of the resident rate tonight is. We want to open that up to as many people as we can. So we're all limited to one calendar, one per calendar year.
Can you clarify that? Would that be for household?
Or household.
For
household. It'd be the same, because we treat it the same way we treat library reimbursements and debit passes. It'd be in the golf. It'd be one per year per household. So there's that item. We want to require a minimum hour amount, so you can't just come rent it for 1 hour and walk away. We need a commitment for a certain amount of time. What that looks like is up to you. We want to increase the rates for the use of the basement areas by $10 an hour. I think right now it's $20 and $30 an hour based on which side you're using. We want that to be $30 an hour and $40 an hour. That's been the rate since 2012, so we're just looking at a little bump there. And that's to cover our staffing costs, because whenever there's a resident rate or a resident night here, we have to, whether they're upstairs or downstairs, we still have to staff it. We'll make sure it's here to close up. And then a point of discussion that we wanted to have with the council was the use of this room at resident rate for for-profit events, right? So we've had in the past residents that have used the room and basically used it for a commercial purpose to raise money for X and don't know. It's a little different than a not-for-profit or non-profit where if you have we do a lot with local high school teams. They'll use it quite a bit for fundraising, but it's different when it's a, let's say, a choir concert and you want to sell tickets to make money. So it's based on how you feel. And staff's willing to accommodate and follow whatever direction you give. And then finally, we want to use a credit card payment system to make payment holds on not just resident credit night, but any night. You want to be able to swipe a credit card, similar to what you'd use at a hotel where you check in, swipe a card, they put some money on hold. There's damage when you check out or you leave the room, we keep that money, we hold that, we charge it what the damage costs. So we take a lot of pride in the way this room looks and we want to keep it nice. So those are the policies that we're asking the council to consider. I would love to hear any comments or questions that you may have.
I have some. Couple things. I like the limiting the resident rate rental, and I'll tell you why. We have, right now we have two a week. We're talking about possibly changing that. But we have two a week, and that's for the entire year. And so I would like to see as many people as possible be able to use that if we're going to stay at the resident night. And I would love for everyone to have the opportunity to bring that for a family reunion or whatever they would like to. So I'm for the limiting. I feel like that's fair. We do it on a ton of other levels. Again, like you mentioned, the dump houses and the library and giving each household a round of free ball. So I would like everybody to kind of be on an even playing field with that, have the opportunity to rent it. I think most of these are pretty reasonable. I'm opposed to using this room for a profit event. That's my personal thing. I've talked to my neighbors. I just feel like if it's a resident rate, it needs to be used for more resident type purposes, weddings, family reunions,
So let me clarify. You're not opposed to for-profit events being in this building. You're opposed to the use of the resident rate for for-profit events.
I'm actually both, but if I had to pick a line, my thing is that I don't want residents to be subsidizing that activity. So if you want to pay the wrap rate that anybody will have to pay, I'd rather not, but I'm willing to discuss that with the rest of the council. But I definitely don't want them on the resident rate night, because I feel like the residents are subsidizing whatever that for-profit or fundraising activity is.
To be clear, for resident rate nights, I mean, it still takes a bit of work. We have to meet with the clients beforehand, get the table set up, and quite frankly, my discussion with Greg and the Vista staff, the most challenging events to clean up for, a lot of times, have been resident rate nights, because we're trying to tell them, like, the reason we can keep this cost so low is that you're doing the cleanup. That doesn't always happen that night. So we want to make sure that we're covering our costs. Then we have to keep somebody here to clean the building. We have to keep somebody here at all times when there's the event. So even though we're trying to keep that cost low, we still have to pay somebody to be here. We have to pay to keep the lights on. Preferably, we have to pay for the lens. We have to pay for everything. So there's still costs associated with these events.
Well, to be devil's advocate, then why do we have enough usage of it that we haven't?
In last year, it doesn't get used as much as I kind of hope it would. I think this is a great amenity for residents. The reason we have a resident night is that we want to put people in the building. It's a great place to have a family reunion. I think in the last year we had 18 I had this conversation with Council mentioned before. We had 18 reservations of resident night. So one of the questions that we have was, well, it's only 18, and we're saying it's Monday and Wednesday, and it's below that 52 threshold where we want one every week. Why don't we just make it just a Monday and say resident rate is Monday, and if that fills up, then we'll explore expanding it to Wednesday.
I had another idea too, because we've been talking thinking about this, and again, we can do whatever. But the other idea was if you decide to go with just the one and where you kind of see what the interest is, that possibly we could go to say, you know, if Wednesday is full, it's 30 days out, which the likelihood of getting a wedding is probably pretty small. We could open that back up. We could also consider opening Tuesday back up and we could go to the basement. So I think there's a few things, but I like the idea of maximizing the higher rate. And that's for the residents too. So all the residents benefit if we charge the higher rate. No one's, you know, at least, you know, if it's available, that brings in more revenue. But then we're still preserving a night for our residents at a discounted rate.
Okay.
here every other Tuesday. We could go down to the basement if that's available and make this room available for people if they want to reserve this room. But I'm very much in favor of making the resident night only Mondays. If we're only having 18 a year, we don't need two nights held for the resident night. Unless you said if they fill up, then open up one.
Can I clarify? So if someone comes in off the street and has like a wedding on Wednesday, and do the people then say, oh, you can't book on Wednesday because that's a resident night?
No.
I don't think so.
It's not resident. No,
so we're not.
It's if you're a resident, you're saying, hey, look, I have this opportunity to have my weddings are a little bit different. Weddings, there is a separate from.
Well, we already talked about that. We already changed our ordinance. So if a resident wants a wedding, there's still a minimum. But they used to try to rent it for like 3 hours.
We're not blocking that out saying, no, if you're not a resident, you can't rent Mondays and Wednesdays. It's just, if you're a resident, this is open to you as an option.
Okay. So I understand that. So because it's not exclusive, I like the flexibility of either Monday or Wednesday because we're not excluding the full paying outside non-residents for coming in and using it. So I don't know that restricting it to one night a week does anything.
So you're saying if we're not giving preference, if people can go ahead and book a wedding and take that night, then it's fine.
That's my thought. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I...
I mean, if somebody's calling 6 months ahead and thinking a Monday night, that full price because they're non-resident, they would have that night.
Yeah, they would have that night. They're not being booked.
Right.
That just gives the residents a little more flexibility to just, mm-hmm. you know, not everything is on Monday night. You know, there's a lot of things that don't happen on Monday night because of where we live. I mean,
what's your reasoning for wanting to do one night?
Well, just because it's not being utilized. I mean, if it were, I mean, because we offer basically 104 resident nights a year. That's being used 18 times. So there just wasn't the demand. So it was just saying, I was pushing the Monday and keep Wednesday open. But I mean, if that's flexibility that you want, that's why I say, as a staff, we're willing to follow whatever policy you set forth. From the day this building opened, this has been following the council, the mayor and council's vision on what this building looks like and how it's used. As a staff, we'd like to come on us to let you know, hey, here's the issues we're seeing, and then we address those, but ultimately it's your call. And we're going to happily do whatever you say.
For the 8 years I've been around here, I feel like the council has been encouraging residents to use it more, you know, as much as possible. And we want to, because as residents, we subsidize it, as you said. And so, you know, just like I encourage residents to use their free golf pass that everybody gets a year, and only I checked last time, there was like maybe 30 have been used this year or something.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't know. I think the flexibility of the additional days doesn't bother me as long as it doesn't exclude other people.
What do you think about opening up Tuesdays? We always go downstairs and make this available.
You know, I'm fine with meeting downstairs. It never bothers me.
Yeah.
So if there's a revenue source for that would take this space, I'm happy to go downstairs.
I don't want to block it out. I think that's what I would think about the resident night. As long as we don't say, oh, no, these are resident nights.
Right.
We can't have it. I like that idea of just having the flexibility of Monday.
Let me be clear. The original resident night nights were Monday and Tuesday. But with two council meetings typically a month and a planning commission meeting a month, you really only have one Tuesday a month, the second Tuesday, that you could use it as a resident for any night. So we would move downstairs. I will tell you that when you're downstairs and there is something going on up here, it sounds like you were having a meeting under a herd of elephants. So there's that. Now, I will say that this I see this as being temporary, because ultimately what we want to do is that the old council chambers in the fire station, we want to convert that to be more permanent council chambers. So we're really looking at a short-term stopgap solution until we take that over. But that's honestly, it's not going to be for a year and a half, maybe 2 years.
Quick question on the minimum hour. What was the thinking behind requiring minimum hour?
Just to make it so the staff just have to come in for 1 hour. It's hard to get a staff member here for 1 hour.
So
if you're having a Cub Scout power,
right? So, do you need to know what, like, meeting fees or
whatever that is.
Well, if they don't clean, then we, that's the point of credit card rules, that we're saying we're, we have to stay another hour after we clean up.
So, why don't we have a cleaning fee? We don't care about how many hours they use it.
It's your call. That's what you want to do.
That's why I just think that kind of makes it a little.
What, to have somebody show up and kind of facilitate the night.
How much does it cost to have somebody come here and do the cleanup and then?
Then, I mean, they're here for the rental. Depending on the type of event, they're here for an hour, maybe two, or maybe three if it was a really crazy party.
Well, in that case,
we
I mean, it's probably a $50 fee if one person, staff person, has to look for everything, right?
Yeah.
But it's a problem too that it can't be that sometimes just get somebody who will come for 1 hour. I mean, we have to look at that too.
Well, most events aren't an hour.
Right.
You know, so if I'm booking an event saying, hey, I want to have this event that I want to do from 7 to 8, and I'm booking it from 7 to 8, well, I'm going to show up at 6, I'm going to set up, and I'm going to be here till 9 to clean up if I'm doing the cleanup. And we want, because we're keeping it well, we do want them to do cleanup. We're here, we help. It's not like we just sit there by our fingernails. We do come in and help.
So right now there is no minimum.
There's no minimum.
And it, would the staff, was their recommendation 2 hours minimum?
They didn't give me a recommendation.
So I feel like,
just briefly check, right?
And then how much is it an hour again?
50 to 100. 50 for half, 100 for the full.
So I don't think it's unreasonable to ask for a 2 hour minimum person. That's my thing.
2 hour minimum gives you a half an hour before and a half an hour after they set up and clean up after a 1 hour event.
And that's, that would cover the same.
I think that addresses a lot of staff's concerns. It's not a common problem, though, too.
Yeah.
Let me be clear. It's not
a... Let's don't make a big deal out of it.
Yeah, it's
not reasonable.
I like...
This is an element die.
Yeah, but I like having that, but I don't mind adding on. Threat is the wrong word, but there will be a service charge, a cleaning fee, if you...
That would just be a matter of making sure the contract stipulates that if you don't clean, then you're going to charge you for the time to...
I would add that.
Should you collect the cleaning fee up front?
We collect a deposit up front. That's why we want to get to a point where you have a card on hold. That a lot of times, sometimes there's damage that exceeds the deposit. So we want to be able to have some leverage in those types of cases.
I would say that I'm in favor of a lab. Well, I'm opposed to the use of the distribution of the resident rate for profit events, as others have mentioned. That's not the purpose. This is to provide access to a family that wants to have a gathering or whatever occasion. If people want to profit from it and make money, they can pay the full rate. I don't have a problem with that because they would just go somewhere else to a private venue and give them the money, and we would have collected that same amount, whether it was for profit or not for profit. So I like the distinction between the two, but if people pay the full money, then they should have, you know, a little more leeway on what they're doing here.
Two things. Let me ask a clarifying question. For profit events, are we excluding, because we want this to be a community room, and it's indifferent to me if I'm using it to sublet for my own personal business, but when it's a 501c3, trying to raise money, or it's a local youth group, like, we have a lot of teams from Lone Peak that come, they do the maintenance here, they might do a fundraiser here. I mean, obviously, trying to generate funds for their group, for their association, and so in that sense, it's for profit, but it's for a not-for-profit or a non-profit.
Right.
But the resident lives in the city and is using the room.
Yeah.
So this is the gray area that we've discussed.
Right. I mean, I don't know how we could be specific about it, but if it's a not-for-profit, it's doing their fundraising, I think I'd be okay with it, whereas it's like a business.
Okay.
That's but it's pretty easy to label any. And
it's
the revenue as fundraising.
Well, that's why I wanted to be very clear. The second thing I wanted to bring up is that this is what I tell staff, is that you have to set the rate at such that you're okay with what they do, because you know that you're going to make money. You're not subsidizing their event completely. So whether it's resident rate, whether it's actual rental on the weekend for a non-resident, whatever it is, you've got to be okay with the fact that they're going to use the room. And you may not always agree with it, but you've covered your bases through the fee. You've got to be comfortable with that.
So I could modify my position on the 2 hour minimum. I could go back to 1 hour, honestly.
Okay.
That's, I don't know. Because I don't want to exclude the PAC meeting. You know, if you got, if it's $100, now you got to pay $200. That's a lot for a PAC meeting.
Well, you don't get a lot of PAC meetings.
I was going to say, let me be the one to tell you that there's only one Cedar Hills scout group, and it happens at my house.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, something like that. I don't want to exclude the, you know, the
that's why we try
sisters get together to talk about the book club.
Well, that's why, that's why we try to keep other rooms available. You may not need this big room for a little book club. That's why we have a conference room you can rent. You have a basement you can rent at a much cheaper rate. So it's not always this room.
So, I don't know. I could be...
Okay, well, that's something the council wants to just walk away from. That's fine.
But I totally agree with what Brian just said about for profit. I mean, we know the difference. I mean, if I wanted to rent the room and I sent a bunch of flyers around or an internet Facebook thing that, hey, come and learn how to build a custom house with Huntington Homes, all right? And then, you know, they would come here and I would hope to get business from it. That's a for-profit thing, and I wouldn't expect to pay the resident rate for that. And I don't think anyone should.
What's the consensus on resident rate night moving to Monday only or keeping it Monday, Wednesday? Steering to there.
I'm the flexible one.
I like the flexibility. I mean, we're not filling it up. And if somebody comes in and wants to pay full price, I'm either paying and not filling it up.
Right.
Yeah.
So if I'm reading the tea leaves, the only policy that maybe you're going to say, you know, we're not going to do that one is the requiring minimum hour. Is that what I'm hearing? No, there's another policy that's not listed on your memo, but it's just the use of the credit card payment on holds. It seems like
I think there's a consensus on that.
I think for me, on the minimum, it's either a minimum or a minimum fee. Yeah, that would be something that covers our time and our staff's time. And what
a minimum fee. One thing we've talked about is this partition is now 10 years old. It's done. And we don't rent a room often in half. Now, so once this partition goes, and there's really only one fee, it's for the whole room and it's $100. So once this partition's up, life of it, I don't know.
So we've never really split it, even though we say we can.
We can, and it's happened occasionally. It doesn't happen very often.
And mostly we want the whole room.
So most people want the whole room.
Okay.
So
that would probably take care of that concern, because then it's just, we don't do it for less than an hour, it's $100.
What are you rent the conference room for a resident rate?
Cheap. It's like $20
or something.
Maybe $30 an hour.
I'm concerned, how would we quantify what is, I mean, would it have to be a legitimate registered 501c3? Like, what if somebody is ill and has cancer and the community wants to rally together and do a fundraiser?
I think you have to. No, I would not require them to show their documentation as a 501c3 or a 501c4. They'd have to just. It's kind of like you know.
Yeah, it'd be pretty reasonable.
And then if it's raising funds to help families battling some tragedy, I mean, seems pretty callous to say, well, that's going to cost you $1,200, right? It seems a little tone deaf. And so I think in that case, staff has to just kind of be very tuned into what the request is and what it's for. But if it's, like Councilmember Getz said, I'm going to do an expo in Huntington Homes and the quality homes we built, then that's much different.
And we have had some requests like that. We have had people who found that this was profitable and asked for their physical time. So it's not that we haven't had
this
situation.
So I would suggest in the policy changing, we would want to add something to the effect of to the discretion of the,
I think that would require some contract language that.
I don't want to have that come back.
Well, why don't we just pull that last item off and kind of bring this in, like put some meat to it.
Okay, so the ones I have right now, I'm pulling that one off. It's, we're okay with limiting resident rates rentals to one per calendar year, increasing rates for the use of the basement area by $10 an hour, just the other ancillary rooms, and then use of credit card payment bills.
That's good.
And then we'll come back on the for-profit contract discussion.
Oh, can we just leave that for the discussion staff?
I wouldn't put it at discretion just because there's going to be...
There's a little bit of arbitrary in there.
Maybe put us in something.
We can work on language and come back. That's not, I don't think that's a huge deal.
Do you want us to table it all together?
No, I would always say let's pass those ones and come back and support the bottom.
You mentioned the credit card on hold.
Yes.
And I think the limiting the resident rate or limiting the number of times you can rent it can take care of a lot of that for us. And yeah, so we're not going to see people renting it 6-7 times or 2 rentals.
I would think to consider is that when you, even though we rent it to Lone Peak Football, the contract's not made out to Lone Peak Football. It's made out to the resident who's acting on behalf of Lone Peak Football. So in theory, they can come back and say, well, that was the linebacker's dad. We're going to save these guys and rent it this time. So there is that, but that's not a common
place. We want it to be used. That's been the mantra of the council, especially the former mayor. She wanted residents to use this facility.
He's just saying six people do on Lone Peak go off the rent at 6
right. No, I understand. I mean, there's some discretion there.
Well, okay. Well, would anyone like to make a motion on this item? I'll make the motion to approve the policy changes you mentioned to the guest room and to table for language the guest room at the resident rate for offices. Councilmember Smith, do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Councilmember Miller. Councilmember Elder.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Aye. Councilmember Ellison.
Aye.
Councilmember Geddes.
Aye.
Thank you. That motion passes unanimously. We're going to move on to item number 12. Changes to the fee schedule.
That's a long discussion item. This one's going to be a fast one. TSSD, the sewer district, they amended their fee schedule to collect a different impact fee than what is indicated on our fee schedule. So rather than the 1708, they've gone through the new impact fee analysis and reporting, and it's now 1785.55, and that changes annually, so we will be following their schedule on that. But that's a fee that's collected by the city and sent directly to TSSD. It's not a city fee.
That's the only change.
It's the only change.
Straightforward.
No
any questions on that item? No? Okay, this is a resolution, so I will take a motion on this resolution.
Make a motion to approve resolution number 10-5-2021A, resolution amending the sphere fees as discussed by the sphere.
Thank you, Councilmember Miller. Go ahead, second.
Second. No.
Councilmember Geddes, thank you. Councilmember Elder.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Councilmember Schmidt.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellison.
Aye.
Councilmember Geddes.
Aye.
That was the last one. Thank you. That motion passes. We're moving on to our last item of the discussion on the seasonal general plan.
It's 4 items.
Oh, sorry, guys. I lost one.
So we talked extensively about this in the work session. This is a discussion that's coming back on the 19th for a formal public hearing, and from that point, staff will go through the public notice and requirement. For the audience to say, what we're requesting of the staff is that the City Council issue formal notice that it intends to modify their general plan by adopting a new land use element. The current land use element is about 20. It can buy alcohol if it wants to. It's old. It was made in the late 90s. But it set out the vision for the city for the course of the next 10, 20 years. And you can go back and read that and see what the population projections are, see what the land use projections are, and see what how they desire their community, what kind of goals and priorities they set, and you can see how well the city did. But it's time the city really revisit this and say, okay, well, now that we're near build out, we need to envision the next 20 years, and we need to say, what does redevelopment look like? what kind of goals and priorities should we be implementing in our general plan now? Quite frankly, this is a general plan that should be revisited not once every 20 years, but probably at least no less than once every 5 years. This should be something that keeps coming back to you. Additionally, like I mentioned in the work session, in light of the drought that we have, there needs to be a focus on incorporating into the general plan integrated land use planning and water conservation efforts to a greater extent. In terms of the build out that this valley is going to see, there's going to be additional pressure on each community to do more than it's currently doing. If you look at the land, if you look at the population projections for Utah Valley alone out to 2050, you'll be surprised and you'll wonder where they're going to live. But nonetheless, they're going to be here. And so we need to do our part to say, here's the resources that we have for water. Here's what we're going to be doing in terms of water conservation. And I think the city took its first step tonight by approving a contract with Ferguson and Mueller. I know secondary meters are not a popular thing. Nobody's excited about it. Well, we're excited about the ability to do leak detection. There's some really cool technology. But we recognize that in terms of water conservation, secondary metering is a priority. And state is mandating it by 2039 that the cities have this plan in place. So we're trying to get ahead of the game. So with that, we're just asking, this is a discussion, there's no motion necessary. We're just saying, we're coming back on the 19th and asking for this event, or for this public hearing and for this declaration to be made. And it'll go to the Planning Commission, they'll work through it for a time, and then it'll come back to the City Council for approval.
Chandler, I think my initial involvement with the city was 7 years ago on the Citizens Advisory Committee for the general plan.
Yeah.
And even 7 years ago, we were saying this is really outdated, it's only gotten worse. I guess ultimately that committee wasn't super effective in updating it because it wasn't. But there's been lots of discussions over the years. I think that we have a good idea of what we want to see Cedar Hills as in the future. We just need to memorialize it and put it in the general plan or place it.
I completely agree. So we have a draft, and I think part of the problem was one cooks in the kitchen, and it's hard to get something on paper. So this time we're taking a different approach. Now, we've already created a draft, and that's what it is. It's a draft. It's some ideas. Most of the ideas are from the old general plan and incorporating some new ones. So you'll see me map the proposal, and it's a future land uses plan map. And it shows what current land uses are and where there's build out available. Even from the time I prepared that map last year, it's changed. So we're kind of, even though we say we're in build out or we're near build out, we're still in a dynamic community, and we need to be aware of that. So I'm excited about getting this done. This has been something that's I've wanted to do for a number of years now.
Well, for the recreation for residents, I'm sure people are going to have questions or they're going to want to have input or something like that. What are the opportunities that are set up for this process? I assume we have like some common and those sort of things, but
absolutely.
We want to look at the resource and contribute somehow.
Absolutely, that's a great point. There's Lehigh, KSL did an article today about Lehigh. They're doing a general plan update. They did a town hall. And now Lehigh's in a bit of a different situation than we are, where they have a lot of undeveloped land that people are concerned neighbors saying, hey, what's going to go next to me? We don't have that situation quite so much. But we do want to give the council, we want to give the public and residents and the greater community to a certain extent. We want to give them the opportunity to weigh in and say, what are your priorities? We want to hear from them. We're doing a decision survey here. I want to say we're going to pull the trigger on that next month. But maybe we can maybe look at adding some land use questions in that. We did a survey. One thing that the committee that Brian mentioned was good at is we actually did a survey. And so we do have some data, and it's a few years old, but I don't know that the sentiments have changed too much in the community in terms of how they envision Cedar Hills. And so that's, you're right, we want to give the public as many opportunities as they can to weigh in.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to say, I think a lot of people have the misunderstanding that the general plan is we do it once and it's set in stone, and then people will say, well, that's not in the general plan. And the general plan is supposed to be a living, reading document that continues to grow and change as the community grows and changes. And I think they get that idea because
lot of cities sit on it and don't continually change their general plan. So I hope people aren't surprised that that's something that we should be doing regularly, we'll continue to do, and that it's not something that gets done once, and then we refer back to it and say, we can't do this because it's not a general plan.
That's a very good point, and something when we add to that is it's 35,000 foot level documents envisioning something for the whole city. It's not color, right? And there's people that say, this isn't part of the general plan. Well, the proposal may have been to code, so the code may be out of line with the general plan, but we need to abide by it. Our general plan and the code should be in harmony.
I appreciate what Kelly just said there, because, you know, I've been on the other side of this table, and it really, I like the fact that as a council over the years, we're flexible about it. I know that the general plan's high level code is different, but our code book is flexible as well. It's not set in stone. And it really bothers me when I go in my profession, go to cities and they just like, that's the code. They approved it 25 years ago and that's what it's gonna say when it doesn't make any sense. And so I love it when we can at least talk about making changes that make sense. And it just doesn't happen very often out there. It really doesn't. I from first-hand experience, I can tell you, oh, that's our code. That's just the way it is. And then that end of statement, end of story, no changing. When it doesn't make any sense. Anyway.
Right. Thank you.
Comment
so,
from the no. from the end user.
So are we good with having this show up on October 19th? And
sure.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. All right, now this really is our last session.
This is a
fiber session.
Right. Unfortunately, we're not making a decision on fiber tonight, but like I said in the work session, I do want the council to be informed on the decision that you will make on fiber, and I anticipate that decision hopefully in the next month. I would like to get moving on this item. I drive through Pleasant Grove multiple times a day. I see them potholing and through their community, and you know, I'm kind of the same way as the gentleman spoke earlier, Mr. Stokes, that I want fiber in my house. So this is something I'm excited about for our community here. So let me give some background. In April this year, the city issued a call for proposals for what's called an FTTP. It's a fiber to the premise project within the city, and as I mentioned in the work session, I apologize for being redundant, but the proposal wasn't looking for a specific way to do a fiber project. We wanted to explore any option that was out there, and there's lots of different ways that you can tackle this. And we got five proposals. One of them came in late, and so it was disqualified. So we have four proposals to consider. From that point, the city council appointed a fiber committee of some residents to evaluate those proposals and then come back to the council with a recommendation. The committee's met a number of times and they've ultimately taken those four proposals and they've narrowed it down to two that they would recommend for adoption. They're not canceling them. You can go with those other, one of those other two, but they're looking at two of them saying these are the two that we think you should consider more in depth. And those are Utopia and a company called Strata. You've probably heard of Utopia because they are in the area. Strata is working its way here. A couple weeks ago, the committee interviewed Utopia and Strata, and then we submitted some additional questions from the RFP and from some of their conversations we've had with them to clarify some information. And so the committee is going to be drafting a report and making a recommendation to the council. So you will be receiving these RFPs being sent. They'll be sent to you here in the coming week. And in short, when you read through the RFPs, these are the main points that the committee discussed that we'd want you to be thinking about as you review those RFPs. It's financing method. This is a great project, but you gotta consider how we pay for it. The project itself, what are its components? And this might look, I've read a lot about fiber now, but this is PON, which is passive optical network versus active Ethernet. I'm gonna go into that for a second. What's the impact going to be on our community? What kind of construction methods are they going to use? And then how are we going to pay for it? And there's different models. There's a utility model and there's a subscription model. I'm going to touch on both of those. And then I want to talk about what the ownership of the network would mean for the city and what it would not mean. And then finally, long term, this is an asset for the city. And so you've got to think about like a golf course, like our water system, like the parks you've got to talk about. how do we take care of it, how do we maintain it, and how do we refresh it, how do we replace what we've built. So let me start with passive optical network or active Ethernet. And so let me zoom in on this. I'm going to start with passive optical network. It's also called GPON. One thing I quickly learned in this world is that there are a lot of acronyms. It's kind of ridiculous. But this is a kind of a basic map of what a passive optical network is. And so you can imagine a single strand of fiber that's being split to multiple users. And so when you have a user, let's say user B is a heavy user and user A is a light user, they may, user B may take more bandwidth away from user A because they have a split line. They have a shared line that's split amongst, and it can be up to, I think, 32 different customers. But if you have a user that's quite heavy, that's a heavy user, they'll be taken off that strand, that strand that they're kind of overusing, and put on one with capacity. So there's kind of a lot of network maintenance and monitoring that needs to happen on a GPON network. Contrast that with the active Ethernet, and in the active Ethernet model, you get a dedicated fiber to each customer. So you're not sharing that bandwidth with your neighbor. So at peak times, we all know, I don't know how many of you stream services frequently, but I stream services in my house quite frequently. And one of the most frustrating things is when it's the fourth quarter or the last inning of a game and all of a sudden your bandwidth dries up. It's one of the most frustrating things. So this is a dedicated line. You're not sharing it with your neighbors. So that's one thing that you're going to be looking at. The Strata model offers a GPON, and that was probably more ubiquitous in fiber networks, in municipal fiber networks. More often than not, they do PON or GPON. And I believe that the reason that is it's a little more cost effective. It's cheaper to install. There's not as much to install, so you're not having as many fiber lines. And then the Utopia proposal is the active optical network or the active Ethernet. Next thing is I want to talk about is the utility or the subscription model. Under the utility model, fiber connection can be made to every home, regardless of whether they want it or not. And so in this way, it's everybody contributes to the debt service. And what happens is when you do it the utility model way, you keep your debt service, you always maintain your debt service obligations because every single resident is contributing. So that's taken into factoring in each annual payment or each monthly payment, however you set that up. But the problem with that is that you do get a lot of people that say, I don't want this. And so we recognize that 10 years ago, when fiber came into the communities, it might have been viewed more as a luxury in that you probably didn't need mirrored speeds of 500 up and down or a gigabit up and down. But as was mentioned and I've heard before, if you are in a job where you need to upload videos or do video editing or do anything that sends stuff to the internet rather than takes it from the internet, you need to have a faster speed than 1 megabyte upload. Otherwise, you're probably doing some work and going to lunch or going on a vacation while you upload your documents. But the utility model would require that every resident participate. And so with that, you pay a base rate and you get a base service, like maybe 5, 10 megabyte download. And if you wanted a better service, you would have to pay for that. Under the subscription model, only those that want the service pay for the service. And this, both companies offer the subscription. I only know one community in Utah that's doing the utility model. It's Providence. Most cities are looking at the subscription model and saying, we're going to build this network out throughout the community, and everybody's going to have the option to join that, but not everybody has to. With that, you have to hit a certain take rate, we call it, how many users are on your network in order to meet your debt obligations. In either case, whether you're with Strata, whether you're with Utopia, Sendwave, Bitstream, whoever you choose, the city's ultimately on the hook for the bond. We are responsible for any payment of any financing. And so our target is typically 35 to 40% a take rate. And if you remember, it's been a year and a half, 2 years, Utopia did a survey in our community to kind of show kind of get a sense of what, where the community, where the residents were at in terms of their level of satisfaction with their internet providers. This may come as a shock to you, but it was low. And I can attest to that because we don't have very good options for our own municipal buildings. But this would force the city to hit a certain take rate. Otherwise, we're having to backstop the bonds with certain monies out of the general fund. Construction methods. One of the proposals comes from Strata, and they can do either one. But I want you, when you read the proposal, they talk about micro trenching, but they're willing to do the other method as well. But micro trenching is essentially doing a saw cut through your asphalt and then laying, and it goes through the asphalt layer and it goes down into the base, the subgrade layers, and you lay your conduit down in the very bottom. And if you look at the conduit that's being laid down in Pleasant Grove, it's about two inch conduit. And then they usually lay about four conduits with each other. So you can imagine them cutting it, laying the conduit at the very bottom of this trench, this micro trench that they make. And this gray stuff that they put in the middle, it's this flowable fill. And what that does is it doesn't change shape according to temperatures. It doesn't expand and contract. So what you have is it kind of keeps the water out. As I mentioned in the work session, when we talk about roads, the big three things we need to talk about are drainage. You have to get water off the roads. If water gets into these cracks and go through that freeze-thaw cycle, your roads are quickly chewed up and destroyed. But what happens is you do cut into the road, you put the conduit in, you fill it with the flowable fill, and then you put this asphalt sealer on top. And hopefully you've done it in a way that keeps the water out of this subsurface. This is a cheaper and quicker way method of construction. Second method, and I wanted to get a picture because I drive by it every day, but I didn't, but if you want to envision this, just drive down Canyon Road. There's about a mile of directional pouring going on. But what they do is they have there are these big machines that they say ditch witch on the back, and it's got a 6-inch tube, and they have a pothole in the public utility easement, which is usually behind the sidewalk onto the residence yard. A pothole they'll dig, and then they'll directionally bore underneath the ground. Not always trench. I've seen trenching in a couple locations, but they'll directionally bore to the next spot where they'll pothole again, and then they'll run the conduit through there. And then the resident will have some utility boxes in their front yard. And it's a little unsightly. It's probably more disruptive to the residents, but that's what the public utility is actually for. It's for the installation of these types of systems. Sorry, I'm moving pretty fast. Are there any questions? Okay. Financing. Under the Strata model, like I said, keep in mind that whether you're with Strata or whether you're Utopia or any other provider, the city is responsible for paying up bonds. Under the Strata model of financing, the bonds would be on the books of the city. They would go on our financial statements, unless the city were to join an interlocal co-op with some other cities to manage these types of municipally owned networks. Under the Strata model, the city would own the network, and that's important for the remainder of this discussion, in that when you own the network, you get the benefit, but you also incorporate the cost into your model. So the benefit is, for some cities, and I honestly don't know how well it scales for smaller cities versus larger cities, but if your take rate is rather than 40%, let's say it's 80%, you know, there's a lot of people paying into this. There could be money coming into the city that will go towards, hopefully, you're setting aside for system refresh so that when you need to replace a cabinet or you need to build a new NOC, which is the Network Operations Center, you have the money set aside to do that. So you're not having to go debt service or finance this in some other fashion. If you look at this, there's two bills in the Strata model. You get a basic plan for 250 meter speeds or gigabit internet speeds for $52 or $57, and each month a payment of $7 is set aside for system refresh. $20 of this goes to the network operator, which would be for their operation maintenance of the system, and then the other portion would go to the city for the payment of the bonds. Right? That's this first bill, $52 or $57. Second portion would be for the service of the internet. And this would go directly to the internet service provider, whichever one you chose. And so both imagine this fiber network as a road system, and any internet service provider can come and use this road system. So we're not the internet service provider. Strata is one of the internet service providers, but they open it to an open network and other internet service providers can come onto it. And so as a customer, you can choose which ISP you want. But there's two bills. There's a bill to Strata and there's a bill to to the ISP. The Utopia model is very similar to this in that other than that all of this money is going to Utopia, and then a portion of it is going to the ISP. However, with Utopia, the bond is not on the city's books. It's on an organization called UIA, it's United Utah Infrastructure Association Alliance, I forget what the U stands for. Because we're working with other communities on this, there's kind of a synergy when all the communities come together and use their buying power to do this. So the money that we pay is set aside, and Utopia gets it for their network operations and maintenance, but also their system refresh. When I've spoken with a number of city managers about this, this kind of is a hot topic for the last couple years. I spoke with Wayne Pyle. He's the city manager up in West Valley. West Valley has been with Utopia from the gun. And he really indicated to me that, you know, there were some learning experiences with Utopia in its original format. And from that point, they learned a lot in terms of marketing, how they put ISPs on the network, how they construct, and that they've got a model that's financially stable. Now, Cedar Hills is in a really unique position in that when Utopia was formed back in early 2000s, Cedar Hills was actually one of the founding members. So we actually have a board seat, which is kind of strange. We're not a pledging member, so we don't have any of the financial obligation, but we have a board seat. So if we joined Utopia, then that board seat would become, well, we'd be a full member at that point. With the Utopia model, their debt service is a little bit, I want to just go through it real fast. Is this black line represents your debt service payments, and this green line represents the money you're collecting. So if you start building the network here in month one through about six, and then about 6 months in, you start collecting payments from those that have just started to join, right? And you set this money aside, and you build up this take rate to a point where you hope that you have enough difference between what you've collected and when that first bond payment comes in, that you can make this bond. Even though your take rate is below the bond threshold, you've set aside funds during these years, you've set aside these funds to make these payment shortfalls, right? And then once you get a take rate that exceeds the bond covenants, you no longer, you're kind of out of the woods, so to speak. Now, what happens with this excess money? If this is your bond payment and this is what you're collecting, what happens with this excess money? That goes to Utopia. That goes to Utopia for operations, for maintenance, and for system refresh. And as I mentioned in the work session, even though the system in Utopia is only 16, 18 years old, maybe going 20, technology keeps changing, and so they have these cabinets where they route the fiber through. And even in the 18 years that Utopia's been around, they've replaced these cabinets three times already, trying to keep up with the changes in the technology. So Utopia gets the windfall. Now, this is the question that a lot of the cities, when I talk to city managers, this is the question that really kind of hits home, is do you want to own the network? When you own the network, you're responsible for the operations, the maintenance, and you get the windfall. In either case, you are responsible for the payment of the bond. But the question is how much do you want to be involved in the operations maintenance? So when you read the proposals, those are the two things that I think that you need to really take into consideration. And you can read through this. It's just what I just said is that ownership of the network requires that the city plan for the system refresh. So you're setting aside that money each month into an account that goes towards maintaining the system in a proper way. And any financial gain stays with the city. This is my opinion, so I'm going to add that caveat that this is my opinion. I don't believe that Cedar Hills is a large enough city with a large enough potential customer base that this would be a financial boon for the city. That's just the way I see it right now.
But
so if you're looking for this as a money-making machine for the city.
Everybody that evaluates this, it could easily be a break. I think that's what we want.
at least.
So, if the city were to go with Utopia, so under the Strata model, the city owns the network. We likely contract with Strata or another company for those ongoing maintenance and operations, and they would be in charge of, the system goes down, they're in charge, their customer service would be handling all the calls. With Utopia, we pay the bonds, Utopia owns the network. So a lot of city managers look at that like buying your neighbor's house. But there's different ways to look at it, and I don't know that the one is absolutely right. This is kind of a new thing for a lot of cities. I do know that the Utopia model as it sits right now is a very financially stable method. So if you're looking at Utopia through the eyes of 2007, it's a much different organization. So you've got to look at it how it is right now.
So you live in BG?
Yes.
And they made a decision recently. What did they decide?
They decided to go with Utopia.
And they went with the subscription model, correct?
Correct.
What's their estimated cost per household in PG?
PG. I want to say that their system was going to cost somewhere in the $18 to $20 million range.
For the individual household?
Oh, it's the same throughout Utopia. So what you can do is on Utopia's website, you can go on and you can see there's a base fee for Utopia. I think it's $65 for 250 megabit speeds. And I think it goes up to 75 for gigabit internet speeds. And that's the same cost across the board, whether you're in Woodland Hills, West Valley, plus a couple. There are some fluctuations on the ISP provider, how much you pay them, but we're talking kind of dollars, probably a couple of dollars. That's what I wanted to talk about with the council tonight. We're not making a decision. I'm happy to answer any questions, but they're going to be sent the RFPs. I want you to go through them because I think that this is a really big decision for the community. So I want you to make it work.
I want to say just because you made that point that it is a really big decision for us. We already did a lot of research, but residents have access to the same PowerPoint that you showed us tonight. So if you really want to dig deep, you can look at the same things that we're looking at. So I hope people will do that if they're interested. And so I think this is something you can access from home. You might not come to a meeting. You can access all of this and you can give us your feedback. You can email us anytime you want. You can call us. And so we want to hear from residents, but we would also love it if you take the time to see the information that we're seeing so we're on the same page. And we know that residents are also doing their research when they want to give us feedback and give us you know, what they like to see us do.
Is this on the city website?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
So
our information, what we see on City Council nights is always on our website the Friday before. When we get it, you get it. So you're welcome to look at it and it stays there and it doesn't turn into minutes. So anything that we see, you see.
You mentioned feedback. What about, again, now that we all know more, how do we ask questions? And who do we ask them to?
I'm happy to share my email with you. There's actually been a number of residents that over the course of the last 3 years, I periodically interact with. They want to see what the fiber projects are. I'm happy to, if you would want to sit down, if any resident wanted to sit down, I'm happy to take the time to sit down with them and answer any questions they have. Because this is a big decision for the community.
What's your lunch threshold?
Lunch threshold?
Lunch. In other words, as a community, a lot of places you can't take. Can I buy you lunch?
No. I don't need lunch.
Okay.
I don't need any lunch, I'm good.
Okay.
But like I said, I'm happy to sit down with people. If anybody comes to the city office and I'm not engaged in something, I'm happy to sit down with you for 5, 10, 15 minutes.
You eat a lot of candy.
I love candy.
So. Well, that's what I said. I didn't know if it would be for you.
But I have a lot of candy, too.
And there's always public comment at the beginning of every meeting. You can come talk about whatever you want.
That's the thing. I don't want to talk. I want to inquire.
Right.
And I don't know what to ask until I see something.
True. So after this, we can put a
question. So Chandler, is the plan then to have the committee?
The committee will be drafting a report, and I know one committee was working on it, and I was hoping to have that by Friday. I'm going to reach out to him and make sure I can get that. I would like to have this on. Ideally, I'd like to have possibly a review action, and it can be tabled until we're comfortable with the decision. But I want to start talking about it in October 19th and November. The longer we put this off, I think the less likely the more likely it is that the bids become irrelevant because of construction cost changes.
So I'd just like to point out that we appreciate the work that the committee's been doing, and we will take their recommendations, and but it's our decision. Okay, I just want to put one out. Right. We will, do not have to follow the committee's recommendation.
I also want to thank everybody who came to the meeting tonight. I appreciate that. We appreciate how people want to engage and be involved, and it's really important in our community. So thank you for coming, and thank you for all your presentations. We've learned a lot tonight. Any other questions? And if not, I will entertain the motion to adjourn.
I'll make the motion to adjourn.
Thank you, Councilmember Smith. Do I have a second? I'll second. Councilmember Allison, all in favor?
Aye.
Great. Thank you for adjourning.